The Athletic.
Gordon on the outside, still Anthony Gordon, great play, and Cher in the middle, and then Gordon brought down. The referee has given Newcastle a penalty. Isak at the Leasers end against Areola from the penalty spot, and he drives it into the bottom left corner, sending the goalkeeper the wrong way. Newcastle hit the front in the 6th minute. Offside flag stays down. Mikel Antonio one-on-one scores. And there's an equaliser as Antonio was played in by a ball dinked over the top. West Ham have played the free kick into the box. Bowen away from Livramento and back to Kudus, who scores. And Newcastle are going mad at the referee. Run the ball out of play, but he's passed it forwards and play goes on. Jared Bowen into the area, scores! Robert Jones says, penalty! Isak from the spot for the second time today to bring it back to 3-2. Turns again. This is Barnes, beats his man. Harvey Barnes! Oh, yes! Harvey Barnes! What about that? It's absolutely unbelievable from Newcastle United. From 3-1 down, they are now 4-3 in front.
Word, absolutely insane. That was incredible. Oh my god, we're gonna have to try and make sense of this over the next 40 minutes or so. But that commentary by Reza and Ando, first of all, absolutely brilliant. Chris, Reza's voice breaking at the end there, hilarious.
Yes, and Ando giving the trademark sort of yelp out as Harvey Barnes has whipped that fourth goal in. Yeah, just
unbelievable.
I mean, we're now nearly 48 hours on from it, and I'm not sure. Well, 46 hours on from it. None of us can explain what happened. We're going to try. Yeah. Please listen to this podcast. Please keep listening. But actually, in terms of specifics of what happened, no chance. But just in terms of that captures the emotion, I think, of that last 13 minutes of normal time.
Have you got your head around that yet, George?
No, I'm feeling pretty epic. What brilliant commentary that was!
Fabulous.
Honestly, I feel like I've aged a week listening to that intro, and yeah. I definitely feel like I aged about 10 years on Saturday. I mean, it was astonishing to be there, and we've gone through like an entire season in one match there, haven't we? I mean, it's incredible. It's
just unbelievable. Yeah,
it's been an epic weekend. I went to see the Lasses on Sunday, and you know, that was a sort of epic victory of a different sort. But I've seen a lot of goals this weekend.
Have you been spoiled for goals, haven't you? We scored as well, didn't we, Chris, straight away. We were also genuinely the better team for the first half an hour, weren't we?
I think so. I mean, the first half was a strange game to sort of analyse, because I didn't think either team, certainly in the key moments, were particularly brilliant, other than the three goals, obviously. But in terms of a large spells of the first half, I thought that both teams gave it away. There were a few mistakes, but I thought Newcastle were largely sort of in control. But there were almost shades, I mean, this is in hindsight, but there were almost shades of the Luton game and the Forest game, that Newcastle take a relatively early lead, and you think, oh, this could be a comfortable afternoon. George and I had written about reset. This is Newcastle's big reset for the rest of the season.
Yeah.
They get a penalty within 3 minutes. It stops start from that point. I don't think that helped Newcastle, because it's 3 minutes before then Alexander Isak, but he scores it because VAR checks to see whether Gordon was offside. At that point, you're thinking, oh, this is a great start. Then, obviously, the big issue with Jamal Lascelles getting injured. And I think that stop-start nature affected Newcastle and allowed West Ham to get maybe a bit more foothold in the game. But I don't think, if you were to push me as to who were the better team in the first half, I'd say Newcastle, yeah, definitely were.
Desperately bad luck for Jamal Lascelles, isn't it? And desperate luck for Newcastle again. It is mostly luck, isn't it, George, or bad luck?
Yeah, I mean, Chris and I are writing about the injuries. I mean, that feels like an epic. We might have to bring that out as a book. So Lord alone knows when we'll actually be able to do that. I mean, it is just astonishing what's happened to Newcastle this season. We already knew it. I mean, I absolutely agree with Chris. That feeling when we go ahead, it's like, okay, that's what we needed. Deep, you know, exhalation of breath. Let's go. They look good. They look, you know, they look positive. And then when that happens, mentally, it's a really sort of interesting response because it, you know, my reaction to that is incredibly negative. When it happened on the pitch, it's like, oh Christ, here we go. And you can almost kind of predict what's going to happen from that point. I mean, you can't, you know, it was an incredibly unpredictable match. So, but in terms of that sort of feeling of here we go again. This is what we've got to contend with. Just felt that to the core of my being. And it is desperately bad luck for Jamal Lascelles. You know, he's needed. Obviously, the context is Sven Botman out for an extended period of time with his knee injury. And then it's now the same. So, yeah, I was at the women's game when that news filtered through that he's going to be out for 6 to 9 months. It's really bad news for him. He remains a very important member of the squad. He's still club captain. When he's come into the team, he's not let anybody down. And it just now leaves the team down to the barest of bare bones at centre-half. Dan Burn slotted across there, did well, I thought. Paul Dummett can fill in there if necessary, and really after that, that's it in terms of centre half. So, it was just astonishing. It's awful news for him.
It's astonishing, isn't it? And in my 32 plus years of watching Newcastle United, I don't think I've ever known a season like this for injury. Here's Eddie Howe on those injuries.
Yeah, I mean, I always think there's no such thing as bad luck. I think you create your own luck. I think we play a really high intensity style. A real physical game. And naturally, if we didn't play that style and we played it another way, the physical cost on our players would be less. But I think when you look at some of our injuries we've had this year and we've analysed them and reanalysed them, you can't put a lot of them into any other category than bad luck, even though I don't really believe in it. And I could go through the injuries, which I won't with you, but it's been a real strange one. And even today, some of the injuries we've got today. I know a lot of the players have been away on international duty. That puts an extra load on them. But I think you see from West Ham's side that they have players going down as well, like we did. The speed of the game is definitely getting quicker, week on week.
Chris Howe himself said that he could have slotted somebody into Lascelles' position when he came off, but he decided to move three players round. But was it really the defensive rejig that caused the problems? We looked vulnerable on the break, didn't we, all game until around about the 73rd minute.
It did, but I do think it contributed to it because I think that players didn't necessarily know where they were playing. What I thought was interesting in how afterwards when he talked about it, I asked him about the substitutions and the thoughts that in terms of what he thought about when he was doing them. And he said for the first one, because a lot of people, given what happened later on, said, why didn't Lewis Hall come on at that stage? And you could have kept Tino Livramento in his better position at right back, the position Newcastle signed him for. But in the end, he went for Kraft. And he said the reason he went for Kraft was because they'd lost Jamal Lascelles and West Ham are good from set pieces. So he thought that Emil Kraft could aid them in set pieces. But the issue there was Kraft came on at right back. Tino Livramento switches from where he'd started pretty well at right back to left back, which, yes, he's done well in this season, but isn't his natural position. Dan Burn then shifts to left-sided centre-half. He's trained almost exclusively over the course of the last 18 months as a left back. He may be a natural centre-back, but he's trained as a left back. And then Fabian Schär moves across to be right-sided centre-back rather than the left-sided centre-back he'd started. Yes, that's a position he plays most regularly, but still, everyone had shuffled. And you saw that with West Ham's first goal, that there were issues all over the pitch, though. I think that back four's never played together. They've never played with Dubravka. There was a huge gap there. There's no pressure from the midfield on Paqueta for West Ham's first. He curls the ball over the top. There's no communication, really, between Kraft and Schär. Gets through that channel, Antonio, and then puts it away. And that's just... It took Newcastle quite a while to adjust within the match, and Howe himself basically admitted afterwards that maybe he made too many changes to that back four at that stage. It wasn't the only reason Newcastle looked defensively dodgy, as we're going to come on to with the third goal. They were the same counter-attacking issues that Newcastle have had so often over the course of the last 4 months at St James's Park, that Forest game being a prime example of that. But I do think that the so many changes to the defence didn't help them.
Yeah, I was just wanting to add to that. This is something I say quite often, but I say it because it's true. As a footballer, you want certainty. You want to know what your job is. You want to know that the person beside you in the team or in front of you or behind you knows where they should be, what they're supposed to be doing. And suddenly that shift meant there was uncertainty all across the back four.
Yeah.
And as Chris said, that then filters through to what's happening behind and it filters through to what's happening in front. It just took them time to sort of get used to where they were supposed to be and what they were supposed to be doing. I thought it was very interesting that Howe sort of talked about that afterwards and sort of took responsibility for it, because it did shake the team up. Equally, there was a sort of a logic to what it did, but it allowed West Ham to kind of get that foothold. There'd already been the kind of break in continuity with Lascelles going off, and Newcastle were just absolutely rocking at that point.
And we can mourn all we like about West Ham's free kick for the second goal, can't we, Chris? But the players just can't afford to switch off like that.
They can't, no. And I do wonder if this was almost a case of the boy who cried wolf for Fabian Schär. He goes down just about every single game holding his face. And, I mean, that might be me reading too much into it, but he does, and it's become a sort of joke among Newcastle supporters.
You do have to protect that face, though, Chris, don't you? Let's be honest. Come on.
It's a lovely face. It really is a lovely face.
Fair point, yeah. But it looks like Pekatar basically says to the referee, can I take this quickly? And he says, yes, Newcastle do switch off. And it looks like Livramento at first has actually got and covered Bowen, but then Bowen sort of takes a dodgy touch. Willock hasn't tracked his man, and then Kuda shoots, and Dubravka, who I don't think covers himself in glory necessarily for any of the three goals.
To do better.
Should he definitely save it? I'm not entirely sure, but it should be a stronger hand. It feels like quite a weak hand the ball goes through. It is a sort of powerful shot, but that was a real sucker punch, because Newcastle had been the better team. They had had pretty good openings, if not necessarily so much clear-cut chances. Bruno had obviously hit the bar with a whip shot from the edge of the area. Gordon had caused problems all game down the left.
Yeah.
I thought that his decision making wasn't always brilliant, though. I thought he shot a few too many times when maybe the shot wasn't actually on, cutting in his right, but he was still the player looking like he was going to make things happen. Same with Alexander Isak, but that felt like a real sucker punch right on half time, right in the 10th minute of added time, which, even given Jamal Lascelles' injury and even given the stoppage for the VAR decision for the penalty, that felt like a long period of it at a time when actually they ended up playing 12 minutes, but that came in the air. 45 plus 10 for Newcastle to concede, and it just felt like a real sucker punch.
And then Jared Bowen, fucking hell, that's his name, isn't it? Yeah,
yeah, it is his name. That's definitely his name. Yeah.
I don't know why I thought Jim Bowen for a second. You know, Jim, who used to be on Bullseye.
Let's have a look and see what you could have won.
Nothing in this game for two in a bed. And when Jared Bowen strolled through for the Hammers third and then Almiron was forced off, things looked very bleak, George, didn't they? And it could almost be said, that's it for the season.
Well, yeah, you know, you look for half time to sort of have a breather, take a break, take a breath, and sort of try and get back into it. And then that happened in the 48th minute. And this was it for the big reset. Look what happened. They've conceded three goals again. You know, for about the 9 billionth time in the last...
Seventh time in 15 Premier League games is the correct stat. Yeah.
Thank you for being absolutely accurate. Seventh time in 15 games. They've got another swathe of injuries. Substitutes are now being substituted. And for all that there was positivity at the start of the match, it just feels like this is like a knife-edge moment for the team. I mean, I don't know if, Chris, you want to say what you said to me at the time?
I'll come on to that in a second. I just want to go on the actual goal itself, because I think it is one of the worst goals I've seen Newcastle concede live. It was from a Newcastle set piece. So they've actually got it forward and attacked. It comes to the back post, and I think it's Suchek who wins the header, and it comes to Kudus, who beats a couple of players. And he then gets to the left byline. Tino Livramento, who's at left back at this stage, but has stayed back for the corner, comes across to be the right back. And Kudus then plays the ball into Bowen, who's in completely free. And the first player to get back to him, even though he's come across to right back, is Tino Livramento. Anthony Gordon, far too late, spots that Bowen was his man and hadn't tracked him. But nobody else comes back either. That's not just digging out Gordon. And Bowen basically has the freedom of the Leasers end to run in. And then Dubravka, again, doesn't come off his line. He doesn't for the first one. That it was the how stark and poor that goal was that I think made it even beyond the match situation. I think we've seen Newcastle concede goals in transition, but how poor that was. That was even worse than some of the other goals that conceded. And then you mentioned the Almiron situation. I think it was just after Almiron went down injured. I turned to George and it was fatalistic within that moment of the match. But I did say, I said, I fear this could be the beginning of the end. And what I meant for that is not just for this season. I did fear that this that the wheels are starting to turn against Eddie Howe. I thought if Almiron goes off here, we've already seen all the other injuries. If Newcastle go on to lose this, say 5-1, and the season really could get away from Newcastle, it just felt like the everything was caving in. That was my fear at that stage. I didn't want that to be true, but that was sort of how it felt to me in that moment. And that's what George is saying about the entirety of the season felt like it was a microcosm of that just in this match, because you went through every single emotion, every challenge Newcastle have faced, they faced again. And at that point, I did think they were staring down the barrel.
Yeah, and at 3-1, Sean Longstaff misses a chance. Shortly after, Alexander Isak also missed a similar sitter. And it produced a very strange noise and a very different reaction in the stadium, George, didn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it was a sort of strange atmosphere. I think the feelings that I'm sort of talking about were reflected in the stadium. I think we all got there feeling positive, looking forward to watching the team again after this break. Starts really well. And then there's the gut punch of Lascelles going down. We're so familiar with seeing this. We know, it's like you know what happens for the rest of this story. And it's almost feeding into, you know, in my case, it's like decades of watching Newcastle not be very good or sort of anticipating the worst. And, you know, we've had a great time over the past couple of years, but that's still part of our psyche. And then certainly this season, it's part of our psyche to feel that things are going to go wrong because they have.
Yeah.
And it's not about the team necessarily. It is about poor fortune. And I thought the whole stadium was like that. I thought it was a strange atmosphere. And at 3-1 down, you just have that feeling that this could go either way here. And it felt like a sort of dangerous moment. Now, when Isak misses his chance, it felt to me like the noise that responded to that was a sort of, you know, it was close. I mean, it wasn't. That was a good chance, and we should have done better. And then when Sean missed in very similar circumstances, the noise was much more critical. And
it was an aggressive noise, wasn't it? It was aggressive, that
noise.
Yeah,
I mean, you put those two things together, and of course the second one feels worse than the first because it's the second one. I mean, that makes sort of sense. But I did want to sort of talk a bit about Sean, because we know now that effectively he's been playing with an injury for almost a year now, and that's not uncommon, and I'm not trying to make that sort of dramatic, but he's been pushing to be in the team, and he wants to be in the team. He is absolutely one of us. He represents us. And I did speak to him afterwards, and I just kind of had this sense of, I felt bad for him. That's all I'm trying to say. And something that I really thought sort of summed up my feelings about what happened was a tweet put out by Warflags on Sunday, and they said, "To be eighth in the league and well in the battle for Europe with the injuries we've had is nothing short of a miracle. Every single player needs massive support as we go towards the end of the season. They've been sensational, keeping us this close." And that's absolutely how I feel about things. I think that if Newcastle can somehow limp to the end of the season and qualify for Europe, I think this counts as a really, really good season in the circumstances. I mean, it has been knackering. It's been absolutely exhausting. But I think the players who've been on the pitch and given their all week in, week out do deserve our support and warrant our support. And I just felt bad for Sean afterwards, because when the lap of, you know, the traditional lap of appreciation was happening, I thought he was sort of reserved from that he was somehow aloof from it, and he looked crestfallen. I think he was also knackered, by the way, because like everybody else, he'd run himself into the ground. But I just wanted to sort of say that he hasn't always played well this season, but there is a lot of context for that. And anyway, I spoke to him afterwards, so here's some of what he had to say.
To be honest, at first off, I still thought we were on top, like gone to really good errors, just the final bit wasn't there. And then 3-1, probably the season's there and there, really. It's either come back or they go 7 points clear and you're probably not going to catch them. So the subs were unbelievable and made a massive difference. But, yeah, like I said, when it's all together and it's positive and fans are with us, it can be a tough place for the teams to play. You know, playing in the game, whether you're actually on top in the game or you're not, and I always thought one top would control the game. They just, they sort of scored from our mistakes-ish. I was sort of in control of the game, and it was just about if we could just calm down and not let the mess that was going on outside was sort of forced into bad decisions, but yeah, with top players stood up today, and hopefully if they're going to be successful, that's the way it has to be.
I mean, the one thing you would never doubt, it is a cliche, is the spirit, is that desire amongst this group of players, incredibly special, incredibly precious, and that, we saw that in spades, didn't we, by the end?
Yeah, it was us 11 on the pitch, and we were the only ones who could get out of that situation, and ultimately we'd done that today, and like I said, the subs came on and done really well, and it's one of them things where if you watch the game and you sort of know about the game, I think people always knew we were in control of that game. It was sort of where people just say the scoreline and then every little thing sort of builds and builds, and then
I know you're getting that, because my like first reaction as a Newcastle fan is, oh, we're fucked. Because partly is that is this season, and part of it is also our history.
Yeah.
And it's like the season is just, you know, it's like it's not a write-off. Yeah. But it's like fuck. It's just this is more of the same. And I know what you're saying, that the mood gets very anxious because it's like an emotional crowd, and it's been an emotional sort of season.
Which is it's a positive and a negative. You can see when it's sort of positive at the end, and we're chasing the games, the same against Luton, like when they're with one, we're attacking teams, it's and like we're just, everyone knows we're gonna score. It's a weird feeling. It's the bit where after something bad happens, you can sort of sometimes the negativity can sort of feed on the pitch, and you can see people sort of going to maybe shells, and it's one of them things where when it's going well, it is a great place to be. It can be tough at times, but like you said, that's the nature of the club, and you've got to be able to deal with it, or you can't deal with it. It's sort of as simple as that. But for us today, it was just about finding a way to get back in the game really and get a point. But yeah, Harvey comes up with two moments of magic, and we said we wanted to try and win all 10 games we've got left, and it's one down, so hopefully get another one on Tuesday.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
I'd eat orchid.
So, Chris, a quick word on Alexander Isak. He did miss that sitter. But he's magnificent from the penalty spot, isn't he? He played brilliantly in open play as well. Cool as a cucumber.
I thought he was really, really good, yes. I thought that, I mean, I actually said on the last podcast about the fact that he played in sort of an attacker midfield role for Sweden, and that wasn't going to benefit Newcastle, but it actually looked like it did, given that he kept on dropping deeper than I think we've seen him a lot of the times this season. But I think he's up to 18 goals for the season now, 14 in the Premier League, both in the penalty spot. And yes, it was up against two different goalkeepers in each half, but the coolness to go the same side both times, slightly different penalties in terms of one of them more whipped than the other one, sort of a little bit, takes a little bit of a stutter and puts it away. But I thought he was very, very good. I thought him and Gordon linked up well.
Yeah.
And they were really the sort of attacking force. From the starting players, they were sort of the attacking force of that team, and he is absolutely crucial. Eddie Howe said after the game that he was asked about Alexander Isak, and obviously Newcastle are going to have PSR issues this summer, and given Botman and Lascelles' injuries, they're going to have to sign centre-backs as a very bare minimum when they already needed players, and they may have to sell a player. But he was asked about Alexander Isak, and he basically said, we don't know, we want to build a team around this guy because he is that special, and I think he really is. Keeping him fit is crucial. Not having Callum Wilson available hasn't been ideal for him. But yeah, he came back and he just coolness personified.
We'll talk about the goals later on, obviously Harvey Barnes' goals, but that pass through for the equaliser was just gorgeous, wasn't it? It was just stunning.
It was absolutely beautiful.
So, George, two big factors in that amazing comeback. The substitutes for both sides, and the penalty. If the first penalty was slightly fortuitous, the second seemed very generous, didn't it? Especially coming from the VAR truck. Chris disagrees.
I disagree. I actually think it's either way around.
You think the first one's fortuitous and the second one...
I think they're both penalties, but I think the first one Gordon actually makes no attempt to play the ball. Gordon actually puts his body in the way of Soufal to make sure Soufal gets him. The second one he does, but the second one is he doesn't actually, he's not moving, the ball isn't going in a different direction, whereas for the first one, the ball is going in a different direction. So I have a controversial, probably incorrect view of them, but I think they're both penalties anyway. It doesn't really matter. Newcastle got them both. But I actually thought the second one was more Stonewall. Yes, he puts his body in the way of Phillips, but he doesn't actually move away from the ball, whereas the other one, the ball's going in a different direction and he moves himself towards Soufal. That's just my reading of
I saw somebody say that the second one could actually be a foul on Phillips because he's put his foot in the way when he's trying to kick the ball.
That was what David Moyes said afterwards. I think in these circumstances, you have to sort of try and take a step back and say, how would you feel if Anthony Gordon was not playing for your team, was playing for the opposition?
And it was I would hate him still. I would absolutely hate the lad. Like,
well, we did when he played for Everton because he was that irritant and he knows how to go down, put it that way. And I think for this, yes, I mean, I can understand West Ham's annoyance for the second one because he definitely, it feels like he puts his way in the body, and then gets kicked, but he does get kicked.
Yeah.
So, with all these things, I'm always minded to sort of say, who cares?
Who cares? We got the right result in the end anyway.
In terms of the big factor, I want to pick up on that because the big factor, I mean, you mentioned obviously one of them is Calvin Phillips coming on and Newcastle wanted him in January, decided against it for a few factors, primarily on cost though, but also worried about his sort of lack of football. And obviously his time at West Ham has been disastrous so far. He gives away that penalty, we can see it harshly or not, but he gives away the penalty. And then obviously for the fourth goal, he doesn't actually track Barnes. But for Newcastle, I don't think it's just the substitute who come on, some of which is enforced. Howe makes the changes in the first half, and we can see defensively it didn't work, and Kraft, I didn't think, played well when he came on. So people thought that Kraft was injured when he came off. Howe suggested afterwards it wasn't really that. He basically hooked Kraft, and Kraft didn't seem happy. He walked down the tunnel after coming off. But Howe decides to go attacking at that stage. He was asked about chaos.
I think you want chaos when you're chasing the game. I don't think you want chaos when you're leading the game. So that chaos that we had in the second half meant the game was open. It gave us opportunities to score. So I had no issue with that time of the game. But maybe if the shoe was on the other foot and we were leading the game, that wouldn't have been ideal.
And so he brings Jacob Murphy, a natural attacking player, to be at right back. I thought Murphy had a mixed game at that stage, but that showed attacking intent. He brings on Lewis Hall at left back and he brings on Elliot Anderson and Almiron initially, who I thought made a bit of an impact, but then obviously he goes off injured and you think, oh. So then he brings on Harvey Barnes, who's just coming back from another injury slightly earlier than he necessarily wants. But the attacking intent of those players and the fact that Newcastle were going for it at that stage, that really benefited them and they all brought something positive to the match.
I think as well, when that penalty goes in, the second penalty for Newcastle, West Ham visibly took a step back. They kind of retreated into their half a little bit. You could see the change, the shift in the kind of impetus and the momentum, and Newcastle had their tails up. How he preys on all of our subs. Barnes, the obvious hero, George, he was absolutely magnificent, wasn't he?
Yeah, well, there's a couple of things to say about that. I mean, you're totally right about West Ham. It is just fascinating how momentum shifts in games and how the psychology of what's going on. As I said, my psychology when Lascelles goes off, and I think shared by a lot of the stadium, was, oh no, fuck, it's one of those days. It's going to happen again. And, you know, we have that kind of mentality. And West Ham, Moyes has been under pressure from West Ham fans, and suddenly something just sort of switched, and that sense of certainty on the pitch just changes.
Yeah,
we've had a bit of a disagreement about sort of what happened in the stadium. I sort of thought, as Newcastle get a goal back, that, I mean, at 3-3, I knew Newcastle were going to win. I mean, I know Sean was sort of saying that as well. I didn't have any doubt at that point that Newcastle would win.
Maybe it's the cynic in me, but I just always felt like West Ham could hit us on the break at any moment. But I know what you mean. It did feel like it turned.
They had that very late chance, of course, as well. But I don't know. I just didn't. I mean, admittedly, by that time my head was so battered that, I mean, anything could have happened, and I wouldn't have been surprised. But on Barnes, he was brilliant when he came on, and this was exactly the Harvey Barnes that, you know, we thought, we hoped Newcastle had sort of signed in the summer. We just haven't seen him because of injury, obviously, a freak injury. And then when he did come back the first time, I remember, you know, Chris and I sort of discussing it. It was like, oh my goodness, he looks a mile off it. He looks so off the pace. And this has been one of the problems that Newcastle have had, that it's not just about players being in or out of the team. It's the fact that players have had to come back into the team way too early. You know, in a perfect scenario, players come back, they stay on the bench, they're getting lots of training, or they're doing the training a bit first and then coming onto the bench. And he had to be used straight away when he came back, and he wasn't ready. Well, he definitely looked ready on Saturday, didn't he?
Absolutely.
He was so direct. He was such a threat. Always looking to cut inside, always looking to shoot. And as you say, by that point, West Ham were retreating anyway.
Yeah.
And he just forced them back too. There were a lot of negatives in terms of players going off injured, but him coming back and playing like that was just so good and such a relief to see.
In terms of the feeling that George had, I'll be honest, at the time, I did think Newcastle had a good chance of going on to at least get a draw or win it. I didn't feel it was inevitable, as some people were sort of saying. It didn't feel to me like it had shifted that way, but that was maybe because we were sort of head down working at the same time, and this is very selfish and very reportery point, but for us, that's a sort of nightmare. You obviously want Newcastle to win, but it's a sort of nightmare in terms of everything happening. But I've had to revise it by, you look at the statistics, and George is going to be delighted because I'm going to bring up XG here.
Come on,
and Newcastle's figure is massively massaged by the fact that they have two penalties, but they're the XG of 4.07 was the highest in any Premier League game for Newcastle this season. It was higher than at Sheffield United when they won 8-0, it was 3.92 then. And actually the XG against West Ham's XG towards Newcastle was 1.42. Now that's middling across the entire season, but since Dubravka was in goal, the only lower XG against Newcastle have had was against Fulham when they had 10 men of 0.28 and against Wolves of 0.8. So Newcastle's quality of chances was significantly higher than West Ham's. They deserved the four goals, and West Ham scoring three was freaking some ways, but equally Newcastle sort of gifted them them. So
to interrupt, Chris, does that then give some context to when Sean is like saying that he felt that they had control of the match?
I think so, yeah. I thought Newcastle, certainly first half, were the better team. I thought West Ham almost hit them with two sucker punches to a certain degree. I think that Newcastle were largely, it was just when they're at 3-1, it sort of didn't feel like that. It felt like Newcastle had sort of lost their way a little bit. But clearly, given the actual quality of chances that they had, and as I say, the penalties do add a significant amount of XG on it, but even so, that shows that they had good quality of chances.
Harvey Barnes had a great chance just after he came on as well, which he volleyed sort of straight at the goalkeeper. But, you know, I know exactly what you're saying, that the chances were there. We mentioned the subs earlier on. Lewis Hall, let's just mention him, and Elliot Anderson, they both came on. They both did very well. It was the right sort of situation for them and for their skill set, wasn't it? Progressing the ball forward and trying to get Newcastle up the pitch. But they did well, George.
Yes, and in terms of Lewis Hall, that's now two games in a row when he's come on and made a positive impact. I think, you know, just looking at him in isolation, that's really important. It's been a very, very tough start to his Newcastle career. And, you know, again, it's interesting that at the start of the game, it's not him that comes on, it's Kraft that comes on. But his head obviously hasn't dropped, or it certainly hasn't in the last kind of couple of games. Really important, particularly if there are now more injuries in defence, which there are. So, you know, Newcastle need all the players they can get. That gives Howe an option. That's good. You know, it's a positive option right now. And the same thing with Elliot Anderson. I mean, he wanted this to be his breakthrough season. It hasn't really happened in terms of regular appearances, again, because of injuries. But to see those players come on and actually give Newcastle a boost is just so important. You know, Anderson, we know he's capable of changing a game for Newcastle. He wants the ball. He wants to run with the ball. He wants to do progressive things with it. And absolutely, Newcastle need that.
I know that this will come across as negative, and that's what I tend to bring across in these sort of situations. But in terms of primarily about Anderson and Barnes, is they did look wonderful on Saturday, but you have to remember they are still coming back from injuries. And George mentioned what happened with Barnes a few weeks ago after he come back and scored and then came into the team, that you can't just immediately think that's going to translate to them starting. I'm not saying they don't deserve to start games. They are certainly pushing for that position. But if they come into the
side, I mean, the way things are going, Chris, they're going to have to start games.
This is it. And this is where it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy, I'm afraid. It's awful to say this. I mean, you know, so obviously Trippier wasn't involved in the squad. I saw him after the game. He said hello. He walked off. He looked kind of okay. But afterwards, Howe's being sort of asked about him having to play against Everton. And yeah, he's not been out for months and months and months. But this is the problem that Newcastle have had repeatedly this season. It's not just the players who were missing for a long time. It's the players who are having to come back a week too early, 2 weeks too early, 3 weeks too early. And we're loading them with our sort of angst because, like, we need them to play well. It's like they are more vulnerable. Everyone knows it. The manager knows it.
Yeah.
they're more vulnerable to re-injury because they're coming back too soon. They want to play. They want to be part of it. That's really positive. I'm not saying that their long-term health or well-being is at risk, but it's slightly too early, you know, and this has happened repeatedly. And, you know, God forbid it happens again. Fingers crossed it doesn't. I mean, Newcastle, if you talk about penalties and either, you know, possibly being lucky or unlucky or whatever, I mean, Newcastle are in desperate need of a break, not a leg break or an arm break or a back break. They need a break. They need a bit of luck with injuries. And so, yeah, fingers crossed, the players who are coming back now are able to kind of get through these games and stay fit.
The Livermore one had me pulling my hair out. I don't know what the hell happened there. They kicked the ball off his foot. He then turns his ankle. And when it comes to freak injuries, I mean, there's not many that are more freaky than that. It was just ridiculous.
Yeah, although he did obviously twist his ankle a couple of weeks ago, so I suppose there was probably a weakness there already. So
fair play, good point. Right then, a bit of a spooky comeback echo. I don't know if you saw this one, George, for fans of nostalgia. Newcastle United 4-3 against Leicester back in 1997. Alan Shearer, Alan from work, scores a hat-trick on the 77th, 83rd and 90th minute. And then Newcastle United 4, West Ham 3 in March 2024. Alexander Isak scores 77th minute, Harvey Barnes on the 83rd and Harvey Barnes on the 90th.
Well, maybe that's why I knew Newcastle were going to win. Because I said earlier there was that inevitability because I'd seen it before. It wasn't just me being clever. It's just I'd seen it before. In my own head, it was a repeat.
Yeah.
I think it was Dan Sheridan who noticed that as well, by the way, just to give him a shout-out. I think he tweeted about it first, so just to give him a shout-out.
Incredible.
Very freaky. Right, let's have a quick break. We'll be back in a moment to round things off and talk about the lasses.
We can beat you, and we are going to win.
Becky Langley and Newcastle women suffered a dispiriting blow last week, losing the FAWNL Cup final at Hashtag United. But if you had any doubts about how they would respond, shame on you. Record crowd at Kingston Park and the Geordies with a powerful display of solidarity, George. A great result.
It was just fabulous. When I'm talking about the sort of sense of angst that there is about the men's team, when I say it's very, very similar to last season for the men, that includes a sort of disappointing cup final. But you just get this sense of like joy being around them. They're just such a great team and such a great moment. I was there on Sunday. I want to give a shout out to my friend Bill Mann, who is from a Mischief of Magpies podcast, who picked an incredible weekend to come over to watch Newcastle. So after having a chance to hang about with Josh Downey last week, another kind of American influence, Bill's someone who I met also in Philly, and he's been coming over regularly for decades now, and it was, yeah, I watched the game with him. That was just an absolute thrill and pleasure for me. And do you have it in the back of your mind that there might be some sort of hangover after what happened at Luton? Not a bit of it. It was a brilliant day, beautiful weather, big crowd, a record crowd at Kingston Park, as you said, Taylor, and lots of kids in fancy dress. So I spent a lot of the game standing just behind a Mandalorian who didn't take his helmet off once. So, yeah, that was a powerful display of just standing watching a match whilst wearing a Mandalorian helmet.
Impressive.
Yeah, I thought it was impressive.
While you were saying all that, Chris was sitting there eating what I can only presume was biltong. It must have been.
It wasn't.
What are you eating, Chris?
Actually, it wasn't. No, they're little cola bottles.
Little cola bottles, you absolute child. Grow up.
I mean, Chris likes to shop at local shops kind of thing, which is great. And, you know, but he brought in this brown paper bag full of misshapen, mutant, fizzy cola things on Saturday, which definitely affected my enjoyment of the match as well. It gave me a toothache and a headache.
Brilliant. So, Paige Bailey-Gale, hat-trick, powers the lasses to a comfortable win. Hannah Greenwood looked stunned when she scored from a corner. And Jas McQuaid rounded off a nice team move, including a superb assist from our pal Amber Keegan-Stobbs. 5-1 win. George, you spoke to Katie Barker after the final whistle. How had they responded in training after last weekend's disappointment?
I think it was important to get it sort of out of our system as quick as possible to learn from what went wrong because things did go wrong.
Yeah.
So we did look at it, we did learn, and then we've trained like extremely hard this week. we wanted to sort of correct some mistakes that were happening in that game. And I think we put on a brilliant display today and we've really turned things around.
Yeah, I mean, that was an astonishing match. If people are looking for a hangover to see if it's still in your system, you've shown absolutely not. I mean, that was a proper statement of intent, wasn't it?
That's exactly what we wanted to do. We can't afford to have a hangover at this point in the season, and we knew that. So we knew we had to go out and really, really put in a performance that we could be proud of, but more importantly, the fans could, because they come out in the thousands to support us last week, and we did let them down, and I think everybody, a part of the club, is really gutted about that. So we wanted to make it right this week, and I think we have.
And you don't want to tempt fate, but obviously that's a brilliant result from your own behalf, but also a Forest of draw. So it's within touching distance now, isn't it?
Yeah, like you say, a brilliant result from us, and all we've got to do is keep doing our job, keep winning, and sooner rather than later, we'll hopefully be picking up the league trophy.
Don't want to dwell on this, but you could possibly should have had a goal today, am I right? Is that a bit harsh?
Not harsh at all, I should have, I know that. Yeah, I don't know what happened, to be quite honest. It was a terrible miss, I'm not going to lie, but got an assist, played all right overall, I think, but yeah, I should have scored.
You were bloody great, man.
Thank you very much, thank you.
Oh man, they were just so good right from the start. It was just, yeah, in your face, aggressive, relentless, no sign at all of last weekend lingering over them, and yeah, fabulous. So pleased for Amber Keegan. We heard from her after the final last weekend, and she was devastated. She was absolutely devastated. And you do sort of wonder in those moments how you recover so quickly, but she was brilliant. She was in midfield. She was playing where she wants to play. So influential, so good at controlling a game of football. Absolutely brilliant. And yeah, Katie, I teased her afterwards for missing that chance, but she's just fabulous. She's the heartbeat of the team, the way she plays.
Never stops, does she?
I had a chance to speak to both parents of Amber and Katie after the match. Lovely to meet them, and everybody is so proud of them, and yeah, brilliant.
Wonderful stuff. One more win should seal the title, although it could be over before Newcastle's next game with Burnley, playing three times and Forest twice between now and then. It could be a bit of a carnival atmosphere against Huddersfield a week on Sunday, George. It could be some event, that.
Yeah, there's no game this weekend, so they've got time to sort of prepare for that. I mean, I'm a Newcastle fan. I will never count my chickens before they hatch. But I mean, it would take a sort of huge set of freak results for them not to do it now. It is an incredible achievement, astonishing achievement. Back-to-back promotions. We're on the verge of it now, and it'll be a very special weekend. That weekend, I would urge people to come to Kingston Park. It was brilliant to see that many people there. We should be so proud of this team. They're great players. Chock full of Newcastle fans, and they really are blazing a trail for themselves, for us, for the club, for women's football. It's just a delight to be around, really is.
Wonderful stuff. Right, just a quick note from our producer, Ollie, before we finish things off. Eating during a podcast recording is bullshit behaviour. I'm furious. What have you got to say for yourself, Chris?
I just needed a bit of a pick-me-up, you know, after all of the adrenaline that's come through. I just needed a sugar hit.
So we all kind of record separately, as well as doing, you know, as well as recording sort of one big thing together. So that just means that does make me feel quite happy, the fact that Ollie's just got to listen to sort of the white noise of Chris chewing separately. He's got his own little recording. Can we actually listen to a bit of that on the pod when you put that together? Can we just hear some noise?
I think I was quite quiet this time, so
Chris chewing. He usually slurps. He slurps, he eats his, drinks his soup.
Right, okay then. Everton on Tuesday night. Tomorrow night, chaps. Tuesday night. Surely we've got a bit of momentum going into this one, George.
Do we?
Surely.
I mean, God knows. I've got no idea. I mean, I think we do. I think we have, like, you know, if you can't take momentum from what happened against West Ham, you can't take it from anything. The problem is, We kind of had the momentum of reset, recharge, yeah, yeah, go again from the international break, and then that lasts until Jamal Lascelles goes down. I mean, yes, we do have that momentum. And I would, you know, it's a night match, it's against Everton, they're in a dreadful run of form, but I think the crowd have to be at it. We talked before recording that actually it was the game that turned the crowd, I think you put it, as opposed to the crowd turning the team. Is that what I mean? Yeah, probably. And, you know, I think everybody needs to be at it, because
yeah,
this is going to be a reduced team, a reduced squad.
Have we even got 11 fit players, Chris? Gordon's absence is obviously particularly huge after his red card towards the end of that game. Annoying for him personally as well, obviously having to miss out against his former club.
Yeah, I'm sure it is. I don't have that much sympathy for Anthony Gordon. I know you complained afterwards about the rules, but he knows the rules. He knows that they've been cracking down hard at those. It was a bit unnecessary as well. I know Suchek had the sort of half chance at the back post, but beyond that, West Ham didn't really look like scoring. I understand the wanting to bring in shithousery and make sure you stay out the game. But it was naive, and he's actually, in that sense, as important as he was on Saturday, he's cost himself and his team for Tuesday night because he is essential for Newcastle. It'll be interesting to see how they cope without him. He's managed to recover quickly from injuries previously, but that probably means Barnes gets a greater chance of starting, certainly with Almiron. Unsure about his fitness, unsure about Livramento's fitness, unsure whether Kieran Trippier is going to be back available, which may mean Lewis Hall comes into the side. As positive as that is in terms of the impact he had on Saturday, again, the game environment he comes into, he plays almost as an inverted fullback at that moment. He gets on the ball, progresses it forward. It'll fundamentally shift the way Newcastle play if him and Kraft, for example, are fullbacks and Dan Byrne goes to centre-back. So then Newcastle don't have that sort of three at the back as they sometimes go to in possession. All of that changes. Now, that's needs must, and Newcastle are going to have to find a way to adjust to that against a Sean Dyche side who we know will be good from set pieces, who we know will play long ball football, who are absolutely desperate for a win because they haven't won since mid-December. So yes, all of that becomes very complicated, and Eddie Howe has to find a game plan with which he only has about 72 hours between games to find that. So it's going to be very much off the cuff to a certain degree as well.
Yeah, Everton haven't won for 16 games. Their form is absolutely honking. Surely we can get this done, George.
I'm going to refer back to somebody who I met at their women's game at Kingston Park as I was leaving yesterday, a guy called David Shepherd, and he came over and he said nice things about the podcast and The Athletic, which was lovely. Very, very nice to meet him. And we were talking about the season as a whole, and he used the phrase hideously wonderful. And I thought that sort of summed it up. It summed up the game on Saturday and it summed up the season. Hideously wonderful. It's like there have been so many great moments and there's been so many difficult moments. So I know you've asked me a question about beating Everton.
And you've chosen to ignore that, which is fine.
I've chosen to completely ignore that. But I'm just saying hideously wonderful. Yeah, we should on form, looking at where they are on the table, Newcastle United should win comfortably on Tuesday. But this is a hideously wonderful Newcastle, and let's strap ourselves in and get ready for the roller coaster.
Absolutely. Right, then that's it, chaps. Thank you very much for your time. Thanks a lot, Chris.
I've got a couple of things I want to say first, one of which I didn't say in the first part of the podcast. So yeah, that I want to give a shout out to Jacob Murphy for the worst faking of taking a free kick I've ever seen in my entire life. When Anthony Gordon was stood on the left wing, Jacob Murphy, who was right-footed, pretended he was going to take the cross with his left foot to run over the ball before Anthony Gordon crossed it in. So I just wanted to give a shout-out to that. I also wanted to give a shout-out to myself.
Excellent.
Because nobody else will.
Yes, nobody else will. For my performance on Friday at the WAF family egg bowling competition. So
what?
Like
come on now. This isn't like
Newcastle,
that's not United, a real thing.
I waited until the very last. Egg bowling.
What is bowling?
Egg bowling. Yeah. So you've got like bowls in France, or like bowling. You've got the ball, and you've got to throw the egg and get as close as you can to the egg bowl. And I came in very last.
Sorry. You've got to get it as close as possible to the egg bowl.
No, the ball. No, you bowl the egg towards the ball or whatever the jack as it would be, and that's what you've got to.
What eggs do you throw?
Boiled eggs.
Hard boiled.
Which are our hard-boiled eggs, which have our names written on them, yeah. So I came in the very last, like Newcastle United. Everyone else has gone before me.
No. We're not finished. We're not letting you finish this. We're not letting you finish this, Chris. I felt like I aged a week on Saturday. I thought this podcast felt like quite good. It was like there's a bit of therapy going on here. And now I feel like I've aged a week in the last 1 minute. The Woff family, egg bowling. What is...
Oh, you've ruined it again. You've ruined
everything. We hadn't nearly got through the entire podcast without mentioning Easter as well, which I thought, given what happened on Saturday, there would likely be lots of resurrection jokes. But we didn't. We didn't actually do any of that. So I had to bring in Easter in some capacity, and the fact that I won the egg bowling competition.
Maybe. I'm never. That's it. That's it. I'm going. See you later.
I'll never ever be able to work out you or your family. It's just ridiculous. Oh God, no, he's got a trophy, sure. George, he's got a trophy. Oh, God almighty. Oh, you're a one-off, son, you. You were an absolute one-off. Oh, my God. Get in touch at Pod on the Tyne on Twitter or X. Email us at podonthetyne@theathletic.com. I don't know what else to say. Thank you for your time, George. Thank you for your time, Chris. Thank you for your time at home. We'll speak to you soon. Cheers. Bye-bye. I laughed so hard during that heart came out.
It's literally one of the worst things I've ever heard.
Oh my God.
I don't know about this all
Thank
the time.
You for that,
it's, like, yeah, it's like, you know, sometimes I speak to Chris like 10 times a day, and it's like, this is like, you know, we've got a great relationship, and it's like, you know, I love him. And then it's this thing, it's like he is an alien wearing human's clothes. There's something that happens, and he gives the game away. He's like a really ineffective alien. He's like an alien visitor, and something happens, and it's like he'll just do the egg bowling. It'll come from nowhere. That's never been a thing that exists.
Nobody's ever done that before.
Anywhere in the world. Nobody's ever done that. He clearly hasn't got any family whatsoever. He's embedded in our world. He's living on his own. He's invented this family around him. And occasionally he just gives the game away that he's not
he's
one
from
of
a
us.
Different planet, that's for sure.
Yeah, so I was had a lovely Easter time egg bowling. No, what? That's not. No one's ever egg-bulled.
Give it a try.
My mum always talks about egg-jarping, and I refuse to agree that I ever did this, but she says that egg-jarping was an Easter thing, that you got hard-boiled eggs, and I think you kind of hit them together somehow.
Like congas, or do you for Easter.
Like congas.
Easter congas.
No. Or is egg-jarping rolling eggs down a hill or something?
Possibly. I don't know. You're the one who did it, so...
Well, I didn't. Apparently, I don't think I did. Maybe she's an
Somebody
alien.
Put some strong psychedelics in my tea this morning.
Maybe
what
I'm the alien and everybody
going
else.
On?
I can't egg bowling. Doesn't they just smash? Don't they just splatter?
They're
hard
boiled, aren't they?
No, because they're hard boiled.
That's the point.
Yeah, but you actually throw them like balls. You actually throw them like balls.
Well, no, it's more ball. It's more, probably closer to lawn green balls, but we'll call it egg balls. I mean, you can't throw. There are no specific rules.
Do you do this
rules.
On a lawn?
I haven't seen them written down. Maybe you can't.
There are no specific rules. Lawn? What, you mean there's like no egg bowling FA? The Association of Egg Bowling.
I think you'll find
there's no specific rules. There's no specific rules. Fucking hell.
7.3 of the egg bowling.
Of course there are no specific rules, Chris. It's a made-up game with you play with your made-up family that you've invented. Egg bowling, there's no specific rules.
I'm knackered now after that.
The Athletic.